The views and content expressed on the following program are provided solely for informational and entertainment purposes. They do not constitute legal advice. A podcast is not a substitute for retaining a competent, licensed attorney to advise you on your specific legal situation. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the show. It is time for Break the Business, where we empower indie creators and have some fun along the way. I'm Ryan Carella, and it is a pleasure to have you here this week. I can't do it, viewers and listeners. I am trying to bring the enthusiasm. I am trying to bring the excitement. I know I need to start the show off with energy. I know you expect that from me. I know you wait for your broadcast and you are expecting my enthusiasm, but I gotta be real with you, all right? I have lost that spirit. I have lost that excitement. I am a broken person. You are viewing and listening to a broken man right now, and that is because my baseball team, the Miami Marlins, is still winless as a baseball team this season. Last week, when we did the show, the Marlins had finished opening day. We had gotten through opening day. The Marlins had lost their first game of the season. Here we are a week later. They still have just as many wins as they did last week's show. They are 0-8 right now. I have never seen anything like this. I've never felt anything like this as a baseball fan. I am just crushed, spiritually crushed. Co-host, Elisa Rock Doc, talk to me. I'm broken. This is insane to me.
But hey, at least they're allowing musical instruments in the park, right?
Yeah, they are allowing musical instruments. I'm pretty sure the only musical instruments being played are like the sad trombone the Price is Right, You Lost the Game tuba.
Do you think this is somehow your fault?
My fault?
I don't know. Brought them up. You brought too much attention to them, and now I think your audience and your discussion of them has probably been the biggest audience they've had in a while, and I think maybe they just crumbled under the pressure.
Listen to me, Rock Doc. I will not apologize for my passionate, unyielding love for Marlins third baseman Jake Berger and his fantastic mustache, okay? You know, mind you, none of this is Jake Berger's fault.
I'm going to do a quick Googleroo.
Oh, no. Producer Graham, take care of this for us. Can you find, Graham, the Jake Berger picture that we were bandying about last week so that Elisa Rock Doc can bask in his mustachio glory?
I need to take it in.
Yeah, Jake Berger is beautiful, and I love him. And by the way, he's not the reason why the Marlins are 0-8 right now. That guy is raking. He's doing just fine. The rest of the team, not so much. And it's absolutely crushing. Like, Elisa, I have a new baby who has now finally reached the age where he's cognizant of the world now. This is his first baseball season where he's actually like aware of his surroundings. I want to get him into baseball, but I feel like getting him into the Marlins and making him inherit my Marlins fandom is tantamount to child abuse at this point.
But you start his expectations real low. So, you know, it can only go up from here in his lifetime. Maybe they'll sell the team.
Again. I hope that Jake Berger's image, you get to see it. The thing about Jake Berger is like, you know, I've known you for long enough to know that you have a certain type in men. and Jake Berger is that type.
Oh,
you know, you like him a little cuddly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you like a little facial hair.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's going to appeal to you there. God, I hope he doesn't turn out to be like problematic and we're all going to find out like there's some stuff like in his closet. Because right now, like, I just really love Jake Berger and he's not the reason why Marlins are 0-8 right now. Anyway, but like, you're experiencing all of this from afar because, you know, you grew up with Miami sports, but you live in Dallas now.
Yes,
but
I do.
I think you said you're still kind of holding on to your South Florida fandom because you were telling me before the show, you're all about the Panthers right now. Florida Panthers.
Literally, I'm looking at Evan's monitor right now and the game is still on and they're up 6-0. Go
what?
Panthers. Wow, wow.
Graham is hard at work trying to find this photo. He just asked me in the chat, how do you upload a photo? Try sharing your screen, Graham. I think that might be the way to do this. Oh. there's going to be a payoff for this.
Just in general, in terms of just like up there on just great baseball player names.
Yep.
Jake Berger is just...
Jake Berger sounds like the name of a baseball player in a 1980s Nintendo video game baseball game where like all of the players in the original Japanese version of the game had Japanese names. And then like the Japanese creators, when they get the game into the United States, go, all right, we need the most American sounding names we could think of. And so one of the players' names is Jake Berger.
Oh, so good. So quintessential. Glad baseball is back, everybody.
Yeah, baseball is back, although you wouldn't know it from the way the Marlins are playing. There he is!
Wow!
There's Jake Berger!
My heart! Still my heart! Oh!
You know what I think part of the problem is? Like, here's where I will blame Jake Berger for the Marlins' performance. Is he's gotten rid of like that, you know, Ramathorn from Super Troopers mustache. And now it's just like full on beard. I think he needs to go back to the mustache.
Yeah, I think the mustache singly just there on its own just holds so much power. And I think it probably makes him more aerodynamic.
That might be right. So, you know, I think Ramathorn was the one from Super Troopers with the mustache. I might be getting my Super Troopers references wrong. Let me know in the comments. It's been a while since I've seen that movie. To business, Elisa Rock Doc. Joining us later in the show, I am happy that we're going to be joined by the guest that we're going to be joined by this week. They are somebody that both you and I enjoy very much. Both you and I have worked with before and have enjoyed the experience working with them. Bill Bolden, Bill Down Upright Bolden, is going to be joining us. We had Bill on a few weeks ago to talk about their new project, We're Doomed, We're Dancing, a 60-track, 60-genre, 60-seconds-per-track album about the coming apocalypse. And this thing is a banger. And I've known about this project for a couple years now, as you have, Elisa. And we have both been waiting for this thing to come out because we knew it was going to be something that the world was going to thoroughly enjoy. And today, as we record this, the album is out.
Yay!
And so we're going to talk to Bill all about the album, have Bill give some great advice, because in addition to being a terrific producer and artist and all that, Bill's also a very accomplished entrepreneur, works with a lot of startups, and so can give artists a lot of advice on the creative side, on the business side. A good time and an informative time is always had when Bill Bolden joins us. So that's going to be great. Stick around for that. In the meantime, Elisa, we got a pretty interesting piece of legal news that I wanted to chat
with. Yeah, I was very surprised to see this come across my inbox.
Yeah. I mean, normally when I tell you, Elisa, that I got a piece of trademark law news that I want to talk to you about on the show, that's probably not lighting
on your
you
behalf.
Up. What's that?
I was very excited on your behalf. I was like, oh my God, this has Ryan written all over it.
Right. This has Ryan written all over it. Like, I wouldn't think, oh, Elisa's going to get excited by a trademark law story, except when I tell you that the trademark law story involves the Neptunes.
Yeah.
And Pharrell. Mm-hmm. Now, and, you know, and when you read the article, there's like some real drama happening here.
Yeah, it's kind of spicy.
All right, let me catch everybody up and then we'll chat about this. So here's what happened. Pharrell Williams and producer Chad Hugo, who are known in the industry by their songwriting duo name, The Neptunes, are engaged in a puzzling legal dispute over the use of the Neptunes name. Pharrell and Hugo, who wrote and produced iconic hits like Hot in Here, Drop It Like It's Hot, I mean, just so many terrific songs under that Neptunes branding, are now in federal court after Hugo accused Pharrell of unilaterally registering trademarks under the Neptune's name, which Hugo alleges violates a longstanding agreement between the pair that they split everything equally. In a court filing, Hugo's attorney said, quote, throughout their over 30-year history, yeah, the Neptune's been around for 30 years, accept it. Accept it, elder millennials. Hugo and Williams agreed to and, in fact, have divided all assets. By ignoring and excluding Hugo from any and all applications filed by applicant for their mark, the Neptune's applicant has committed fraud in securing the trademarks and has acted in bad faith. In response, a rep for Pharrell said, quote, Pharrell is surprised by this. We have reached out on... Can you imagine just like Pharrell saying it just like that? I'm surprised by this. Like, I imagine him wearing that hat. The lawyers coming into the room being like, Pharrell, somebody's filed a, Chad Hugo's filed a federal lawsuit against you. Just, I'm surprised by this. So here's the full quote. Pharrell is surprised by this. We asked him. He was wearing the hat. He said he was surprised. We have reached out on multiple occasions to share in the ownership of the and administration of the trademark, and will continue to make that offer. The goal here was to make sure a third party doesn't get a hold of the trademark and to guarantee Chad and Pharrell share in ownership and administration. Hugo's reps have disputed Pharrell's characterization of the situation. And, you know, this has been kind of bubbling for a while because I checked the trademark database, Elisa. Pharrell has been registering trademarks in the Neptunes in like different product categories going back to at least 2020.
Wow.
And now I guess Hugo, he tried to register some more recently. Hugo said, what are you doing? And now Hugo has literally made a federal case out of it. And to me, like, this is just so frustrating and so unnecessary because it sounds like from the way these two parties are communicating, like nobody's trying to steal anything from the either person. Like, this just seems like a failure of communication, you know, and a failure of working as a team. And now legal filings have resulted, which is insane to me.
Yeah. And it, you know, and I keep hearing, you know, like a violation of a longstanding agreement. And in my head, I'm like, was that in writing? Or was that just like, hey, we're buds and we're totally cool and it's totally going to be fine. I'm just going to save this seat in the trademark office for you. I forgot to put your name on the form conveniently when I filed this. I promise I'm going to let you back into this. I swear. It's a little dicey, which is a shame because just nonstop bangers from that club.
I know. Like, these two need to figure it out, if for no other reason that we need a lot more bangers from them.
This breaks my heart in the same way that like the Hall and Oates restraining order news hit me. Like, oh, come on, really? Not them. Yeah. Not them. Love is dead.
You have gotten to the core of why I do find this kind of stuff heartbreaking. Because, like, one of the things that gets me up in the morning as an entertainment lawyer is I try to dedicate my career to preventing stuff like this from happening. Like, I don't want to create a world where stupid law crap gets in the way of people staying friends and creating beautiful music together. The idea that we may not hear any more bangers from the Neptunes for the rest of our lives because lawyers didn't get into with these guys early enough and explain to them how trademark law works really sucks to me. So you had mentioned, Elisa, was this agreement in writing?
Yeah.
And had they set this up the right way with a written agreement, this could have all been sorted out. So let's like flashback, say like 20 years ago when these two were, you know, building this amazing songwriting producing empire, and they realized, hey, this name that we have, the Neptunes, people seem to really like it. It's a pretty valuable brand. Let's talk about how we can make sure that we each share in the ownership of this. And so, I mean, this is kind of a similar parallel, but I think it works here, is when I represent bands in my legal practice, one of the first things that I will do with that band is sit them down and have them hammer out a band agreement, which outlines a whole bunch of different things, like how do you split the money? How does the band vote to decide, like, what things are done? You know, how do they split the songwriting? Do they own the masters together, or does one person own the masters? Who gets to decide which employees are hired? You know, all this kind of stuff, right? And one of the things that every band agreement has in it is specific language that says how the band name is owned.
Ooh, right. Yep.
Do the band members all own it equally? Does one person own it? Or the method that I usually recommend to artists in the situation that the Neptunes are in right now is you create a new company, you know, that does nothing. It has no other purpose in life but to own the trademark in question.
Right.
Or to own all of the trademarks that the group has, right? It is a trademark holding company. And who owns this trademark holding company? All of the people equally. So 20 years ago, the Neptunes could have created a company called Neptunes IP LLC. Chad owns half, Pharrell owns half. And then that entity registers the trademark. And that would have solved all of these problems. And had they just made that very simple move 20 years ago, had lawyers actually done their job and explained this stuff to them, rather than kind of going rogue and filing trademarks without talking to the other person, we could have like another 20 years of bangers from the Neptunes. And now we're not going to have that probably. Cause I don't know how they get past this. This looks ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a shame too. And I think it's an excellent point, and I'm glad that you do this, but me as a musician, I could see how people would be forgiven for thinking like, okay, we worked out songwriting and publishing and copyright, and like those things are like the biggest important chunk. I can see how people would just completely not really think about trademarking the name itself.
Yeah.
So the and lesson learned.
And music is filled with so many legendary examples of bands breaking up and having a really hard time figuring out who gets the custody of the band name
divorce. It's wild, because then you also have this like Ship of Theseus situation where you have enough band members swapping out. I feel like there are some bands that are touring right now with the name and no original
members. None of the original members.
It's bananas how that works.
That was a amazing Ship of Theseus reference. Daniel Maruda writes in, also domain name registration. Absolutely. Any of the IP that your band has needs to be hammered out in the band agreement, like copyrights, songs, and musical compositions and master recordings. Figure out how those are going to be owned. Trademarks, figure out how those are going to be owned. And that would also include things like domain names, you know. And a lot of artists, like, they don't want to have those discussions early on.
It's, right? Yeah, it's difficult. It's like, it's weird.
You know, we're happy right now. And like, you know, these brands aren't worth anything yet. Like, nobody cares about our band name right now. Like, why are we getting all litigious now over something that's not worth anything? And the answer is, that's the time to have these discussions.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not famous yet, when these names are not worth anything, while you all still love each other, because it's a lot easier to figure out all those things then, because as I tell clients all the time, when money shows up, everybody gets stupid. When money and fame show up, everybody gets stupid. And things that could have been hammered out in like over a couple beers in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you tell a lawyer what you want to do. The lawyer takes an hour to draw something up that you all sign. You know, you're out a couple hundred bucks and 20 minutes of your time. You know, if you wait until, you know, 20 years later when you're Pharrell Williams and Chad Hugo and it's 2024, you're now paying trademark lawyers what I imagine is going to be, by the time this is all settled, six figures worth of legal fees.
Woof.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And like, you gotta like probably like do like a deposition and like wear suits in court stuff. Like you don't gotta now, do that. Yeah.
And what sucks is the best case scenario here, the ideal dream scenario in terms of like preventing Pharrell and Chad from just losing a ton of money is they both like realize, okay, this is stupid. They sit at a table with their lawyers and they hammer out a settlement to this federal case, which I imagine will involve Chad Hugo owning a piece of the company that Pharrell Williams used to own and register these Neptunes trademarks. Ah. Done and done. That's the best case scenario. And even in that scenario, I'm afraid that these two probably already hate each other so much that they're never going to write again. So the best case scenario still involves us not getting any more Neptune songs.
The well worst, has been poisoned. Yeah. I don't like it.
And the worst case scenario is this becomes some long protracted federal trademark litigation. And for people who need to know, federal is just another word for expensive. all over something that they should have just figured out with their lawyers over a couple beers 20 years ago. This is the kind of stuff that frustrates me as a lawyer, because this is an example of just an unforced error in entertainment law that is getting in the way of beautiful music getting created. It stinks.
Yeah. But shouts to NERD, though. That was a moment in time.
Oh, 2004 was fun, huh? Oh, my God. That might have been like one of the last albums I bought in a store.
Wow.
Was that NERD album. Oh, my goodness. It was so good. It was so good. Oh, my God, yeah. See, like, you know, I think the young people, like, they just think of, like, Pharrell, they think happy.
Oh, yeah, nah. Mm-mm.
They don't know NERD and, you know, and some of the crazy good songs that the Neptunes wrote together. And, you know, just... And now we don't get any more of that. That stinks. They just think of Happy and the Rangers hat or Ranger hat. yeah. And that's,
it's a shame.
It is a shame. All right. So I got two things on my show sheet here, Lisa, with about, let's say 10 minutes left before we go to break. And I got this whole thing about like big tech and AI and these artists have signed a petition, and it's kind of important news. But like between how sad the Marlins stuff has made me and like how frustrating this Neptunes story is, it kind of just makes me want to, instead of going to this AI story, which I think is going to depress me even more,
depress
I
want to
know how you are doing. And I know that the viewers and listeners do as well. Every time we have you on, we get a weekly career update. We find out the cool stuff that you're doing in the acting space, in the voiceover space. Mm-hmm. And I think we want that. Tell us, how's the career going? What have you done in the last month?
Man, I'll tell you what I did today. I was a substitute teacher for a half day for fifth graders. Bruh. Woo, my legs still hurt. My voice is definitely tired. I did miss the classroom. Hashtag not like this. But yeah, so part of the career update is, you know, trying out different forms of supplementary income. But I do have some fun bookings. This past Tuesday, actually, just a couple of days ago, I submitted the last raw files for my first audiobook of the season. It is called The Redemption of Daya Keen, and I believe it comes out in May. That was a really, really fun book to read, and I hope people like it. Young adult fiction, queer protagonist, living in a small town and navigating high school and, you know, method acting at this point.
Real stretch.
Yeah, real stretch.
You really had to do a lot of research for this role.
It's really had to dig deep. So that is filed, and I should be doing pickups over the next couple of weeks for that. A couple of weeks ago, I got, I auditioned for like four roles in a video game, and I got three of the four that I auditioned for. And then when I got into the studio, the Excel spreadsheet had actually six characters on it.
Whoa.
So in this video game, I believe they were still using a code name. So as soon as I get the actual name and release date of it, I'll let y'all know. But I was pretty much voicing like just so many women. Just so many women and a distress signal, which was very, very fun because I got to do like a fun like red alert voice for a video game, which is like, check that off the list. So that was fun. And, you know, I'm glad I did my substitute teaching bit today. That was, I'm going to call that, you know, character work, and character development because
researching a role. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, and this is also something to like anybody, I know we tend to gear towards musicians, but you know, maybe there's a lot of folks in other entertainment spaces that rely on things like auditioning specifically to get their work. I got booked a few days ago for something that I auditioned for in October. So,
whoa.
Yeah. So that
goes back when Pharrell and Chad still liked each other.
This is what I'm saying.
That's how long ago it was.
You know, you do good work and you get put in the room with people and you never know, you know, maybe you don't hear anything, but it's entirely possible that they might actually have you on a pile of next time we need someone, let's pick this person off the top of the list. So it's like, don't necessarily be discouraged by not hearing from things for a while, because you would be surprised apparently at how long it takes to get booked. And this particular gig is, I'm playing a teacher. I know. I am playing a teacher for like teacher training software. I'm teaching.
That's cool.
I'm helping teaching teachers how to teach, but I'm acting. So that's absolutely fun. So it's really cool that I get that. I'm auditioning for another cover band sometime next week. So
wow. So you're getting to do the music stuff too. That I love
when it rains, it pours, folks. And this is definitely a pro tip where it's like, maybe if it feels a little bit like a drought for you, you know, like I know the first couple of months were like feeling kind of slow and everything. Don't get discouraged. And if you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready, because you never know when just like from, you know, from one moment to the next, you go from like, man, I haven't really gotten any hits in a while to, all right, hold for this. You're booked for this. I did like a focus group version of a commercial, and that was like I got the call on Tuesday to go into the studio that Wednesday, like the following morning. So like you never know when things are going to potentially turn around, and maybe you're gonna have to start actually being like, oh man, I might need to like trim things. Like there might be a possibility in your life that you might have to start like saying no to things and prioritizing things. And I wish that for all of y'all. But I feel very, very blessed to, in every single aspect, I feel like I'm being very much creatively fulfilled. I think the only thing that's missing is like a bowling league. And then I think I'm like, donezo.
If you get into a bowling league, we have a lot of really great music-related bowling team names that we put together last week.
That's right.
Yeah. I think Splitski was one of my favorites.
Ooh,
or 10,000 Laniacs. A lot of great ones. Hannah Nobby from Brooklyn Bowl, who we interviewed last week, her winner was Build Me Up Gutter Cup. All good names. Yeah, no, all solid, all around.
Bangers.
To me, like your story there at the end, Elisa, you know, articulates kind of a theory I've been kicking around lately about like entertainment industry success that doesn't, you know, that doesn't get discussed enough. And I think we do need to start seeing success in this manner, because I think it will keep people motivated, right? I think a lot of people think that like entertainment industry success is like you slowly build up to it, right? It's like climbing a mountain, and like as you get up each step, you can like look back and be like, oh, look at how much I've climbed this mountain. This mountain is really, really tall, but like I can see the progress I'm making, so I know I'm on the right track on this mountain. And in reality, in a lot of cases, trying to achieve success in the entertainment industry is more like chopping a tree where like, you know, you just keep hitting with that axe and like nothing happens to the tree. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a bunch of cracks forming inside the tree that you're not seeing.
Yes.
But you're just looking, you're like, I'm not doing a damn thing to this tree. And then one day, like, you know, weeks, months later, years later, you do one more hit and the whole tree comes down.
Yep.
And a lot of people will drop their axe right before the tree comes down, thinking, well, I'm not making any progress on this. I guess this isn't for me. And it's so often like so much of success in the entertainment industry, at least from what I've seen, is more of chopping the tree than it is climbing the mountain, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Right? It's like so much of the work is like you grind and you're like, I'm not hitting. Like I'm not even getting the chance to audition. Like my inbox is dry. And then this week I got one of my like white whale auditions that I always thought, I always joked about getting this particular audition. I was like, oh man, if I could be this, you know, X character, that would be amazing. I actually got a chance to audition for that this week. So like, you never know like what, like it might take a while. You might be like, I don't even know if I'm going the right way. But my acting teacher was talking about this last night in class. It's like, it's hard to get away from things that are meant for you, but it's even harder to force things. And sometimes you do kind of have to let go and trust the process and love the work. And then hopefully, you know, the universe will be like, yeah, that was good. Let's throw her one.
Well, you're getting a bunch thrown lately, and it's wonderful to see. And I'm glad that we're going to get another Elisa Rock Doc audiobook coming soon. Especially,
and I have music coming out today, by the by.
I know, we're going to get to that too. That's also ultra exciting. All right, you know what? Since you brought it up, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We're going to come back in 2 minutes so we can bring in our guest, Bill Down Upright Bolden, to talk about the We're Doomed, We're Dancing album featuring Elisa Rock Doc and a whole bunch of other really terrific musicians. That's going to be awesome. That's going to be a great conversation. Don't go anywhere. We're back in two here on Break the Business.
Break the Business is presented in cooperation with Ryan A. Corella, PA. Ryan A. Corella, PA is a law firm providing transactional entertainment legal services, including contracts, business formation, commercial law, copyright, trademark, and more. Ryan A. Corella, PA, Miami, Florida. rkpalaw.com.
Streaming services for Break the Business provided by LEK Entertainment. LEK Entertainment is a full-service entertainment company offering everything from consultations to full-scale events and productions, including audio and video productions, voiceovers, staged theatrical productions, script and music development, and streaming services. For more information, visit lekentertainment.com. LEK Entertainment wants to help you bring your story to life.
Thanks for supporting Break the Business. If you have a question or topic that you want us to discuss, email us at breakthebusiness@gmail.com. You can follow the host, that's me, on Twitter at Ryan KAIR, and you can follow the show at the BTB Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook, and on all major podcast platforms. And now, let's get back to the show. Welcome back to Break the Business, everybody. Ryan Corella here with Elisa Rock Doc. I just checked Jake Berger's stats for the season. He's batting 355 this year. This is not your fault, Jake. I love you. Elisa Rock Doc loves you. You need to grow your mustache all the way
Thank
back
you.
Again.
Please.
And also, the Marlins kind of deserve this because they ran their GM out of town last year, who was the only female GM in Major League Baseball. And yeah. Karma is a B word. Let's go ahead and she was so great. I miss her.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and bring in our guest this week. One of our favorites here at Break the Business, a musician, producer, DJ, and entrepreneur. Today, our guest released their latest work, We're Doomed, We're Dancing, a 60-track, 60-genre album of 60-second songs that bring in performances from dozens of musicians to tell the story of a coming apocalypse through music. You can find the album on all major platforms right now. Go do it. Well, don't do it right now, but like, you know, right after this is over, do it because it's that good. We are happy to welcome Bill Down Upright Bolden on to Break the Business. Hi, Bill. Welcome back.
Hello. Muted.
Bill's muted, but that's okay.
Thank you for having me, Ryan and Elisa. It is a pleasure to be here once more.
Allow me to be probably not the first, because I'm sure you've gotten this a bunch already, but one of the many to have said to you, happy album release day.
Thank you.
I know you have been on this quest for over a couple years to bring this really cool piece of work into the world, and now it's here and people are digging it. How has the reception been? What have you been hearing from people so far?
The reception has been strong. Well, you know how it is. You get a couple reviews and press placements that are mostly rephrasings of the initial press release. But I had a really good pair of in-depth, actual critical reviews that I'm very proud of with people who clearly listened to the whole thing and made artistic commentary. And I had a great YouTube video from Critical Reactions Channel. He's a composer and producer who made an hour and a half long YouTube video of him listening to the 60 genre thing in its entirety and live reacting in real time as he heard each new song for the first time. And that was cool. That one hit me in the right place because that is how I wanted this to be absorbed. You know, you sit down, you put it on, you buckle up, you put on your safety helmet, and you're like, all right, what you got for me, right? And then it's crunk, reggaeton, Vegas, opera, Norway, Sweden, LA, bam, 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 right? And
this is 60 separate tracks, each one a completely different genre with completely different musicians for each recording. And you're saying that even though all these songs are very different, your recommended listening experience for people who take in this album is to take it in all at once.
Yeah, it's meant to be consumed as a single DJ mix. You know, I went to a lot of pains to make sure that they all transition so that it is listenable to as 1 hour long mix. And it's just spaced out so that the changes happen every 60 seconds. But it's meant to be highly contrasting and entertaining, right? So that you're listening to it. And just for one example, one of my favorites is the transition into Elisa's track, Crimson Echoes' track, where there's 60 seconds of just a cringy, like, German industrial agro-tech song, the kind of, like, Combi Christ sort of stuff you've seen the goth kids stomping to your whole life. How's that one go? Yeah. Be your body moving one more time. And like, you get 60 seconds of that, and then all of a sudden the DJ scratches, it comes in, and now it's Elisa and Evan with Crimson Echoes doing their best U2 impression with like an arpeggiated "Where the Streets Have No Name" type soaring 80s ballad. And there's just never a dull moment, right? You're right on from that into the Kesha sound alike, into the Bruno Mars sound alike, into the black metal, where that was the one where the guy who did the YouTube review did speak up during that. He's like, this is nightmarish. This is fiendish. And it was like, that's cool, man. You know, I mean, I can't change the fact that it's black metal. I'm not saying I like it, but I had to represent it. A lot of people like it.
As Bill mentioned, Elisa Rockdock is one of the many, many terrific musicians that helped put this really ambitious project together. And since we have you here, you know, can you talk a little bit about what your experience was like, Elisa, working on this track? Like, what it was like to sort of, like, I mean, take us to where you were when Bill sort of fed you what the prompt was, what they needed from you on this. Because I imagine this isn't like anything else you've done with either you or with the band Crimson Echoes.
No, absolutely not. And when we worked together on the previous on a previous project. And so it's something about the, it's like freedom within constraints. It's like, I sort of make the same argument about like why I miss Vine so much, because it's like, all you had were those 6 seconds to deliver some like high quality comedy, and having that sort of, those sort of guide rails for BPM, for key, for literally length. it made it so that it's like, all right, what are like my favorite parts of a song? Okay, it's a chorus and a guitar solo. Cool. We have exactly enough time for that. and having a prompt, you know, we're doomed, we're dancing. Like, like you give me, I mean, I'm a PhD student and a teacher, like you give me a whole syllabus and I'm like, all right, I'm going to cruise through this class. It's going to be fun and awesome. So it's something about that structure and having that structure imposed on you by someone else versus like your own creative process where, you know, hopefully something lands in your brain that sounds good. And sometimes you don't even know where to start. This was like absolutely refreshing and a great way for me to get like my creative juices going again. And I've always been a fan of that genre of song where it's we're doomed, we're dancing. So like All She Wants to Do Is Dance, Melt With You, Miguel's Party Life, like all of those songs I took as inspiration for this. And I also wanted to have like my own kind of like a little bit of a Robin Call Your Girlfriend moment, just cause like I'm obsessed with that song. So like all of those things came together. And Evan, of course, delivering one of my favorite solos. Ever.
We need to give love to Evan's guitar solo on this track. We have sang the praises of it on prior episodes, but we can't say enough about how insanely good this guitar solo was.
You got the sound file ready to go for this one, Ryan?
Oh, actually, let me see.
Do we? I'll shoot you the drive link if I need to. But
but yeah, so thank you, basically, for kind of like I imagine that maybe for some musicians it might be maddening to have like how the heck am I gonna pull this off? But I'm sort of like, ooh, a puzzle to solve. So it's always fun whenever you land in my inbox, Bill. It's always a treat.
Well, thank you. And I mean, you touched on a couple things that I do think really make this project work, which is one of them is the 60-second time slot, which the guy who was making that reaction video today, like, reacted while it was going on. But then after it was all over, he took about another half hour to like sum up his thoughts. And he's like, I kind of see now what was happening. Like, every time there's like an instigating event that tells you what the genre is, but then after that, you don't have time to waste. You have 60 seconds, right? And so there's very much a thing where like in the country track, you hear like 5 seconds of a pedal steel guitar twang, and then it's down to the song. You can't do 8 bars of like establishing the beat or the chord progression. It's down to business, right? And that is probably the best thing I think that came out of the restrictions is like, there's just not a wasted moment. Right. And then the other thing that I really like that you lean into is everybody was given the same prompt, which is the world is ending. It's ending right now. It's up to you how, because there are no shortage of ways. Just open the news. There's like 10 to pick from. You'll be fine. But whatever your reaction is, just do it, right? And so the best part is how every genre reacts differently, right? Like in the country song, he sings about eating his mama's favorite casserole for the last time. And in the rockabilly song, the vocalist is a sleazebag who thinks he can outrun whatever's happening in his classic souped up car. And in the KMFDM tribute track, it's obviously war, 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 and bombs, bombs, bombs. And so everybody just gets their own take. And I think that it's weird that for like 60 tracks all made on the same premise, you don't really hit the same note twice.
Yeah.
You know?
You really don't. They're all very different genres, and yet you seem to handle all of them quite well. Like how... Talk about the process of like having to produce in some genres that you've probably never produced in before.
Well, that's where I think maybe a little bit of my secret power comes in, right? Which is that I'm very good at dissecting. I have like an engineer's brain that can pick apart everything that's going on. And so for the stuff I wasn't as familiar with, there's two key things, right? The first was weeks of study. And the second was bringing in somebody from a point of authority within that culture to make sure that I'm not going in half-cocked, right? And so first, I would spend weeks studying it and just using deduction, like, as some things are harder than others, right? Like, reggaeton, obviously, reggaeton is a huge deal, but the pitch really is quite simple, you know,
That's Dembo, right?
And then I had to uncover a few more things, like exactly how you want your bass lines to go, but it wasn't so bad. But like jazz is like, I go teach myself jazz theory, which is just a whole distinct theory, right? It's not even, it's like, actually jazz theory sets me off because I'm learning about these like 13th chords. And then it's like, but so that it's not too crowded, you just leave out the first, third, fifth, and seventh. And you just play that. And I'm like, you monsters. It is,
well, as you
that
know,
is
it's
a
about
different
the notes you
chord.
Don't play.
Yeah, it's all the, that's one of my favorite Simpsons quotes was when Homer goes to the jazz concert and Lisa says, just listen to the notes she's not playing. And he says, I could have done that at home.
Yeah, listen to notes not playing at home.
So I would do that, but then like the important part is, right, is it's very important that I'm coming from a place of love. So I didn't make any track until I had immersed myself in it enough that I got what makes it tick, right? Mm-hmm. And so like some stuff is not my steez. I didn't really like jazz that much. I definitely really didn't like black metal that much. I don't like dub that much. It wasn't that interesting. But I would just listen and listen and listen for weeks on end until like finally I get it and it's inside me. And then as an extra layer of insurance, right, I'd make sure to go get somebody from that culture, right? Like I'm very certain I don't want to accidentally do like something that's more of a satire or a parody than a loving participation. So like I got an Argentinian guy who auto-tune raps in Spanish for the Latin pop track, and I got a Jamaican guy who scats reggae over the dub track and everything, just to keep it safe and make sure that everyone is represented, right?
I love that. I didn't know that you put so much cultural consciousness into the creative process with this, which obviously as you're saying it sounds like a necessity to be able to do this like faithfully and fairly. And so I'm glad you were thoughtful enough to
I didn't want anybody who knew a certain thing better to me and be like, hey, you didn't show love to K-pop with this, you basically parodied it. Mm-hmm. Right. And
and the line can be so fine, I'm
right?
sure.
Yeah.
So I immerse, I learn, and then for safety, I involve, and that seems good.
I'm telling you, viewers and listeners, this is a really terrific album to listen to. You should absolutely listen to it all the way through. Just, I mean, it's a real joy. Any music streaming platform, you can find this thing.
I will point out, if you look it up on music streaming platforms, it is too big to be one album. It was rejected when I tried to make 60 songs in a single release. So I had to submit it as two sides. So there is a there is an album called We're Doomed, We're Dancing Side 1. There's an album called We're Doomed, We're Dancing Side 2. And you can either listen to them in sequence or you can listen to the third album called We're Doomed, We're Dancing the Continuous Mix, which puts it all in one track for you.
Cool.
We do have the track that Elisa helped you with. It's called Reincarnation Ain't What It Used to Be. Graham, let's go ahead and play that one. It only takes 60 seconds and we can get right back into the interview after that. A little quick music break. Here we go. Oh, Evan did not have to go so hard in the solo, but we're glad that he did.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we lost Elisa. She was.
I think we lost.
So
Elisa
immersed in the music and feeling it so much that her computers crashed.
Well, it's one of those like synchronicity things. There can only be one of her in a time, and she was in the song. So
that's probably what happened. IRL. She was actually singing it live. People didn't know.
Yeah.
She's got to do some internet things. So anyway, while we wait for Elisa to come back, I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and get your perspective on something related to music, but not the album project, because I do very much appreciate your thoughtfulness and your knowledge about technology and music. And so I wanted to talk to you about a story that I know you've brought to my attention. A lot of other folks have as well. About AI and music. On April 2nd, over 200 musical artists signed an open letter calling on AI tech developers, tech platforms, digital music services to stop using AI to, quote, infringe upon and devalue the rights of human artists. The signatories to the letter included artists like Billie Eilish, REM, Kacey Musgraves, and many more of music's heaviest hitters, and they expressed concern over tech companies using copyrighted works to train AI models and the proliferation of AI soundalikes in music. Another kind of big quote here from the letter, quote, AI poses enormous threats to our ability to protect our privacy, our identities, our music, and our livelihoods. Wanted to get your thoughts on what these artists are saying about this. Is the rise of AI in music something that you're concerned about? I know that you used AI or have worked with clients in your VC practice that are using AI. Are you excited about AI? Are you scared of it as a creative professional?
I'm not that afraid of it. And I do understand a lot of ways in which it's scary. But I'm a little bit insulated in the sense that for me, I gave up on turning a significant livable profit off my music a very long time ago. And that freed me up to enjoy it. And now making it is its own reward. And I only ever tried to be a professional musician once. For about 6 months in 2018. And it really didn't work out. It's thankless. I started DJing at like multiple clubs a day and sucked all the life out of it, right? And that's when I realized I gotta make the money programming. I gotta have my passion be music. And so every day I'm seeing ads for like, this new VST plugin makes the beats for you with AI. This new VST plugin makes the samples for you with AI. And I'll simply say, that's great. It's just not what I want. I explained this to a friend of mine who was wondering like why I wouldn't want to use AI in my music. And I point out that like there's already been a established thing with sample libraries and presets that are too generous, where I have always been able to, for 20 years, do very little effort and take something that is not mine and put it in my DAW and say, now it's mine, right? Like, that hasn't changed. I already was able to load up Splice and say, give me this drum loop, give me this bass line, give me this trumpet line. Look, I made a song, right? And so the whole raison d'etre of being who I am at all comes from like, well, it doesn't count when I do that because I haven't expressed myself. And so I actually view the whole, now AI will make the song for you as sort of just a subset of that pre-existing problem. I already could take stuff that wasn't mine and call it mine, and I didn't. So why start now? I used AI twice on this album. Once was for the track "Please Don't Kill All the Humans," which is
perfect. I love the titles on this album. By the way,
it's centered around its specific apocalypse. Is what if AI takes over and kills us all? So for that one track, I used an AI rapping software, and I told it, I am letting you rap a rap about how you will kill all the humans. Please write your own rap and perform it. And it did, and it's not very good. And I took the thing and put it in my song, And other than generating one like sample elsewhere with AI, that's it for AI on the album, right? I could save time, but what's the point? I like AI to automate labor, but I hate it to automate creativity. And that's the real shame that I think a lot of VCs and tech bro types are getting wrong right now, is they don't understand. Like, I saw a tweet earlier that really summed it up, where it's like, I wanted computers to automate doing my dishes and running my errands so that I could write and sing. And instead, computers have automated my writing and singing, leaving me to do dishes. I mean, I do think it's worrisome, but the other thing is the genie's out of the bottle, that this hasn't been about music for a long time. It's always just been a instantiation of branding, marketing, and strategy that happens to be instantiated in the form of music. But that said, someone can make Taylor Swift AI songs all day. It doesn't matter, because it doesn't come from the source. And so the teen girls, well, and the adult girls, and the adult men, and the teen boys, all won't care, because like, it's nothing. It didn't come from a story that Taylor has to tell, right? And so you realize that it's not the music that's valuable anyway. It's the brand and presentation. And the only way I ever turn a profit on my music is when I invent a story that's more compelling. Because I write a lot of good songs, right? But I'm long past expecting people to care. It's a good song doesn't mean that much anymore, right? I only pause to make a little money when I sell a story and a peer group and a posse with it. Then we can all make a little money. That's what I think.
I like that perspective. To me, when I read the artist's letter, I think there's kind of two separate threads that they, you know, two different points of attack that, you know, you have to really evaluate separately, right? There's one side of it where you could just say it's a general amount of discontent about the idea of AI is replacing creativity and creative professionals. And then that can be a debate about, you know, oh, you know, why, you know, people might say, oh, you're just being a Luddite about this. And, you know, were you upset when synthesizers were invented or DAWs were invented? Like, technology is always going to play a role in the creative process. Like, stop fighting technology. And, you know, there could be a debate there. What I think is even what is less of a debate is the other things about what artists are saying, which is, hey, you are taking our intellectual property to make this AI happen, whether it's in the form of taking our copyrighted works to train your AI models without our permission, or using our names and likenesses to put us in your music without our permission, or put us in your videos without your permission. That's actually against the law. That violates any level of federal and state IP laws, including some new laws that are getting created in places like Tennessee that specifically are going to prohibit that kind of stuff. And so I think, you know, whether or not where you stand on the debate about like whether technology can replace humans in music, you can still say, hey, you can't steal people's work and steal people's likenesses.
Well, the tricky part there in a lot of ways, though, is the thing they have to fall back on is that it is a neural network learning on just what's there, which is not fundamentally, unless you discount the absence of the soul, that different than human learning, right? And so to some extent, there's a little bit of a difference between like, I can comprehensively study everything that KMFDM ever wrote, pick it all apart. I'm really good at picking things apart. I could do it. And then at some point, I can make a track that just sounds like it could have been a KMFDM track, right? And they're doing that via an algorithm. But it's interesting why it's illegal when the machine does it and not when I do it. And I think we're holding on to a little bit of a human, I want to say like hand wash. Like it's a laundering element when it goes through a new brain. But I also, you know, I always read the book Steal Like an Artist. I don't think it's that different. Like, we're all just big rock tumblers. Mm-hmm. and the AI is a rock tumbler too. It's just really bad right now. And it makes you add, what's the point? Like, I had fun on this album making a song that was kind of a send up of KMFDM style, but it was fun to do. It was fun to do it. I didn't want to go to some prompt and be like, computer, make me do it. It do the same job I did, maybe a little worse. Who cares, right? And another day when I have more money, I'll just collab with KMFDM. I don't know.
I'd love to get your perspective on this. I know we lost you for a bit with your technology, but thankfully you're back. And I know this is something you've written, spoken, talked, and just thought a lot about.
Yeah, and totally not depressed, especially as a voice actress, in addition to being a musician. I'm just getting assaulted on all sides. Also, as a visual artist, it's a great time for me.
but you can still do your dishes.
I can still do my dishes. That's what it is. It is sort of this weird thing, this weird like content arms race that's also happening, where it's like more content equals better. Therefore, we need to streamline the content creation process. And that's what it is. It is the devaluing of art into content that is basically making it like a race to the bottom of like, I want to populate this brand new streaming service with a whole bunch of fake songs by a bunch of real artists. And maybe have some sort of a cash grab that way, but think of the quality, you know what I mean? But like, think of the quality. And also like, why do you engage with art? Like, literally why? Like, ask yourself what it is that you are truly getting out of this thing. And I understand the sort of like novelty of, you know, of like, oh, let me like transform my face and like see what I would have looked like as a mythological goddess using an AI filter or whatever, but not at the cost of someone else's art being used to do that when there's a perfectly good artist that wants to add to their portfolio that I could get a cheap commission from and actually hire the human and promote the human behind it. I feel like as we're devaluing art, we're devaluing like the community around art when it becomes content and easily shoved out. Like, I love myself some T-Bell, but you can only mash the same ingredients together so many times in different configurations before you're like, I want something new and fresh and original.
Well, so, I mean, I feel that. I do think that what AI is devaluing very quickly is this but that kind of art, which is something you just alluded to. Like, there was like a cottage industry of people who could draw you, but as a Simpson, right? And it's like, honestly, that stuff is not so much artistic expression as it is just filling a thing, and AI is doing that. There used to be this content creator that I haven't heard from in a long time, Ali Spagnolums or something, who would do all these, like, she would do the, like, what if BTS's hit single this was a rockabilly song? What if the Barney song was a death metal song, right? She'd do all that. And I do think that like AI is going to come for that stuff's lunch because it's very paint by numbers. You know, take the Gettysburg Address, but say it like a pirate. It'll do that all day. But every time you try to use it for legitimate innovation or novelty, it falls apart, right? And so I do think it is going to, it's going to shovel off some of that low effort stuff, but I don't think it's coming for like true expression. But that doesn't mean that people still won't try to take money off your plate, Elisa. You know, I'm sorry for that. Yeah, right? They'll try.
I want to stay optimistic about that sort of thing. Our guest has been Bill Bolden. Check out their latest album. It came out today. We're Doom, We're Dancing. This thing is really, really special, and I think the praise is only going to continue to roll in for it. I want you all to be a part of that praise, so check out the album. We have all been waiting for it for years. We had Bill on a couple years ago when they were first talking about this album, and now it's here, so now we all get to enjoy it. Bill, we are so very much out of time, but I got to get your answer to our final question here. Do you have any last tips for the indie creators out there to help them move their careers forward?
Yeah. I had a great experience on this particular project with the Kickstarter, letting the fans pick the genres. It opened the door and invited chaos into my life. It was like a Jesus take the wheel moment. But it worked for me. And when they told me to do weird shit, I was just along for the ride. I think I'm going to do that more. See if it can work for you. See if there's some way you could take fan feedback and make a new piece of art out of 100 random stranger suggestions and see where that goes. I liked it. Maybe you'll like it too. That's my tip for the week.
Love it. Our thanks to Bill Bolden. Thanks to Elisa Rockdock and producer Graham. And of course, our thanks to Jake Berger. Jake, what's going on with the Marlins isn't your fault, buddy. Hang in there. And thanks to all of you viewers and listeners for checking out Break the Business. Mwah, we love you. We'll see you next week.